Thank you, ladies. God has called us to be salt and light in the world, not in the church. What does that mean? I am grateful that we at Cedarville University can join with Southern Seminary in recognizing that God has called us to engage the world with the heart and mind of Christ. Culturally relevant, it's the question mark, but of course the gospel is culturally relevant. It always has been and always will, because it meets human need at its very core. But unfortunately, much of what has been done in the name of Christ has made even the message of the gospel in the Christian life culturally irrelevant. Our job as Christian leaders and educators is, again, to restore the gospel to its prominence in the discussion, every discussion about truth. I stand here this morning with you with a challenge, and I'd like to challenge your thinking as well. Being relevant, of course, is taking cultural themes and keys, ideas, and using them to communicate timeless truth. Jesus did it all the time, didn't he? Jesus lived at a time that was charged politically and religiously as an agricultural, growing, evolving, mercantile culture. There were people they loved themselves, people they hated, the Romans for the most part, the Samaritans. And when Jesus was challenged to communicate truth, he said, there was a man who went sowing. There was a man who fell among thieves. Take, for example, a mustard seed. Hand me a coin. How does that translate in our culture today? So that we might connect with a world that desperately needs to understand the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I want to turn our spotlight this morning on popular culture. Because as Michael Medved says, it's the only culture we've got in America, unfortunately. It's one of our greatest industries and our greatest export as well. Joe Stoll and I were speaking to Christian educators in Vienna and down in Nairobi a few months ago. And you know what's hot in America is hot in Vienna. And even in Nairobi, Kenya. It's inescapable. How do you, as a Christian leader and educator, look at the world around us and realize that most kids get their most influential truths from celebrities, people who are well known just because they're well known? They haven't actually done anything. How do you battle that? A half hour of Britney Spears is more influential in a pre-adolescent girl's heart than a whole year of Sunday school. And until we recognize that and begin to deal with that, we're going to have a hard time connecting with those who desperately need to hear the message of Christ and its relevance. Let me show you where we're really struggling. These social icons. This question was asked the Miss USA pageant a number of years ago. If you could live forever, would you and why? What a worldview question. And all the finalists came up and answered this question on national television. Miss Alabama. Anybody from Alabama? I should have asked afterwards. This is how she responded. I would not live forever because we should not live forever, because if we're supposed to live forever, then we would live forever, but we cannot live forever, which is why I would not live forever. Why are some of you writing this down? I don't... Or take this from another well-known theologian, Mariah Carey, who once said, whenever I watch TV and see those poor starving kids all over the world, I can't help but cry. I mean, I'd love to be skinny like that, but not with all those flies and death and stuff. Or the well-known theologian Brooke Shields, who once said, smoking kills, and if you're killed, you've lost a very important part of your life. Engaging our world. That's why you're here. You want to know the Word of God because it drives you to know the God of the Word. But this is the world that God has placed us in to communicate that. You become the translator of that truth to a world that desperately needs to understand it. Not only in the way we articulate it, but in the way that we live. Not only in the way that we live, but the way that we treat those outside as well. Our world is very, very strange and getting stranger. This is the world that we minister to. These are the major influences. Far too often, Christians have turned their backs on what the major influences are. We've tried to tell our kids, stay away from that stuff. What does that make them do? Didn't work with Adam and Eve. Doesn't work with our kids either. So this is our challenge, to look at contemporary culture and say, Lord, here I am. For some reason, you have me here in 2004. This is the world you've called me to minister into. What do? Many of you have read all the classic studies on how we are to confront culture. Let me give you, in a nutshell, the short time that we have, three basic approaches that I believe American Christianity has taken toward culture. And I'm focusing on popular culture. We can look at academic or corporate or political culture. But let's focus on popular culture because many of you are going to find yourself confronting that more than anything else. First approach is to be offended by culture so that we withdraw. And let's face it, most of contemporary culture is offensive. How often have you heard a song, seen a celebrity on television, or read something in the paper that is offensive to your sensibilities as a human being and to your commitment as a Christian and a follower of Jesus Christ? Almost daily. And so it's easy to say, come out from among them and be ye separate. Indeed, that's the challenge, but oftentimes that is misused. We have withdrawn into an arc mentality. We have a subculture where we often pride ourselves in not involving ourselves with those outside the faith. A woman once told me very proudly that a non-Christian had never been in her home. Oh, we'll interact with them sometimes. We go on these evangelistic forays, but then we hurry back to the ark, lest we find our hands and hearts soiled. Over half the kids who are professing followers of Jesus Christ when they're 18, from your youth groups, your Christian schools, by the time they graduate from the state university, no longer profess to be followers of Jesus Christ. Over half. They were ill prepared for what they found themselves confronted with at the state university, both in the classroom and in the dorm. All of the friends I had in high school, I came to Christ, I was raised Catholic, came to Christ in my senior year of high school. All of those guys that helped me come to know Christ no longer walk with the Lord today. Why? They went to the university. And there, you were there, many of you were there. It was a challenge, wasn't it? It was a huge challenge for many of you who went to state universities. And sometimes you make moral choices and you change your worldview to match the choices that you've made. Our churches, our schools, and even our homes ill-prepared them to engage what they found themselves right in the middle of at the state university. Or even worse, they become schizophrenic. They have their Christian faith here and everything else over here. And they don't know how to bring the two together. So they find themselves living a lie. A double-minded man and woman. And the instability rocks the church. There's lots to be offended by. Here's a opening page of a website. In memory and in honor of Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold, the two Columbine killers. This particular website says, "We honor Eric and Dylan because they died for what they believed in." How offensive to the families of those who were killed, to that community, to a nation, to a world. Many of you have probably never seen the adult-rated cartoon called South Park on Comedy Central. A whole generation of kids have, however, and Jesus is a regular. A lot of kids, this is the only Jesus they know. How do you share Jesus Christ with kids when you mention His name? This is what they think of. A blasphemous portrayal of the Son of God. We can cluck our tongues and shake our heads, but God says, okay, what do we do? He empowers us. There comes a time when we realize we have to leave the Shire. We do have to protect our children when they're younger, but there comes a point where we need to teach them to be prepared and to engage. In fact, Tolkien reminds us, the wide world is all about you, he puts in the mouth of Gildor. You can fence yourselves in, but you cannot ever fence it out. How are you preparing your husbands and wives, your children, to engage? Well, a second approach is to be delighted by culture, so that we assimilate. To be excited by what we see in America and say, hey, this is God's country after all. And so we become just like them. I looked for the world and I found it in the church. I looked for the church and I found it in the world. George Barna has told us now for the last almost 2 years that the moral choices of Christians and non-Christians is indistinguishable. You cannot tell if a person is a Christian or not a Christian by the way that they live and the moral choices they make. And the message to our kids is even more mixed. I don't know if Dr. Mueller has invited this group here for worship. It's Andre and Antoine, two fellows from Atlanta, Georgia, very talented, by the way. A group called Outkast. At one time, they had 3 of the top 10 songs on Billboard just last year. They have a song on their most recent CD called Church. And they ask these questions, man, have you ever really wondered like what it's all about? What's the meaning to all this? And the song goes on to talk about going to church to find the meaning of life. There's lots of hallelujahs throughout the song. And if you're an adult, you think, whoa, this is incredible. They are actually raising important questions. And let me add, by the way, that popular culture, for the most part, is raising more important questions among our young people than the church is. We degenerate it oftentimes into entertainment. We convert a lot of kids to a youth group, but not to Jesus Christ. But listening to this song, you think, this is incredible. They are raising ultimate questions, which is what we should be doing with young people. Because teenagers nowadays, their long-range planning is about the next 20 minutes. Anything beyond that is a fog. But to get them thinking about ultimate issues, ultimately will lead them to Christ. We hope, as we communicate clearly. So here's Outkast. We say, this is awesome. This is incredible. And then Most of the other songs, like The Way You Move, I can't even put the words up here. They're so inappropriate. And you're a kid listening to this, you think, well, they're talking about God and Jesus and church, and the next song they're talking about sexuality, like, if it feels good, do it. They must go together. Must be okay. And kids make choices that are irreversible in their lives. There's an assimilation. Or Missy Elliott, also a very gifted performer, in an interview said, I just didn't pop up on the scene yesterday. I've been here a while, and it's just because I wanted it that bad and kept my faith in God and believed that He was going to be with me all the way, and He's still here with me and still giving me blessings. And then almost all of her songs are inappropriate. Now, here's a head-scratcher. A song. Have you ever thought about your soul? Can it be saved? Or perhaps you think that when you're dead, you just stay in your grave. Is God just a thought within your head, or is He a part of you? Is Christ just a name that you read in a book when you're in school? Could it be you're afraid that what your friends might say if they knew you believed in God above? They should realize before they criticize that God is the only way to love. Sound like a pretty good Christian song. It's actually a song called After Forever by... Anybody know who this is by? Didn't think you would. It's actually by Ozzy Osbourne when he was with Black Sabbath, Master of Reality. That's a head-scratcher, isn't it? Truth is truth, by the way, no matter who says it. The third approach, which means it's the correct approach because it's the last one, is to be distressed by culture so that we engage with the heart and the mind of Jesus Christ. I speak to a lot of Christian schools. The most heartbreaking response I get is when I mention a contemporary artist like an Eminem or a 50 Cent. And all those Christian kids go, oh, yeah, yeah. And if you know anything about these artists, you know how inappropriate their worldview is, how salacious and antagonistic it is to the things of God. And here are Christian kids getting all excited. My dream and my prayer for this next generation is that when I mention these artists, these kids weep. Their hearts break because they know they are without Christ. That's what got me years ago starting to pray for specific artists and celebrities every day to come to Christ. Second Peter chapter 2 describes in an offhanded way this perspective. Lot, a righteous man, who was distressed by the filthy lives of lawless men. For that righteous man living among them day after day was tormented in his righteous soul by the lawless deeds he saw and heard. What torments your soul? When you look at the culture and the society around us, do you weep? Or do we look down our noses in arrogance, cluck our tongues and shake our heads? Very quickly, the example of the Apostle Paul. The point he wants to make is simply, it's about them. Let me show you what I mean. You know this passage very well. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. The first 18 verses, the Apostle Paul talks about the privileges that he has in being an apostle. He talks about the freedom that he has in being in Christ. He's free from the law. He's free from other people. He is free. He is free. Praise God, he's free. He's so free that in verse 19 he says what? What does he say there? Go ahead, you can say it. I make myself a slave. To whom? Say it out loud. Everyone. Think about that for a moment. I make myself a slave to everyone. For what purpose? He wants to see them come to Christ. What he's saying is, it's not about me. It's not about us. It's about them. I want to know what it is that makes you tick. He's saying, I want to know where you're finding your security and your significance, because I want to build a bridge to Jesus Christ for you. That's my job. When I hear that M&M is the number one seller to Christian kids, I want to know why. What is it that he is saying? What persona is he putting out that is supposedly meeting the needs of kids? Whatever their needs are, the provision is Jesus Christ. Whatever their questions are, the answer is Jesus Christ. They're not finding it there. I want to know what it is that they're thinking, because I want to build that bridge to Jesus Christ for them. It's about them. You do that if you go to India as a missionary. Don't you learn the culture, the language, the customs? You look for those redemptive analogies so that you can build a bridge to Jesus Christ. This is not our home. We're passing through. The people around us desperately need to hear in a coherent way the message of Christ. I've had more opportunities to share Christ with young teenagers talking about Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson than bringing up the Scriptures. Almost every cultural perspective in one way or another is getting at the heart of a need in our culture and society. Every movie, every song, every television program has a worldview at its base. It's telling us to believe something and to behave a certain way. And if that's where they are, I want to jump in and say, you know, this is saying this and this and this. The answer is Christ. There's one young man I've been talking to for 2 years. I did a presentation on contemporary nihilism and used Marilyn Manson as an example. One of those kids wore all black, hair black, black fingernails. He loved Marilyn Manson, he said. I said, I could tell. He hated God, hated Christianity, Jesus, and the Bible. But as we began to talk about Marilyn Manson and his nihilism, and the worldview that he's coming from, God began to open doors. If this is true, then what about this and this and this? And Marilyn Manson became his door to Jesus Christ. When I was a youth pastor years ago, I did something. I'm not sure I would do it quite this way this year. I realized that I wasn't very good at working with young people. In fact, I was invited to start a youth program at this church. They had 3 kids in the youth program. And in 2 months, we'd grown to 2. So we were off to a great start. But in a year, we had about 60 kids who had been won to Christ, and we were discipling. But they were all rough as a cob. Never been to church. Their families had never been to church. And it was really interesting seeing how they were living their lives. And I began to realize that their music choices was a major influence in their lives. Listening to music is the number one activity of teenagers outside of school. So I said, okay, we're going to do this. I want everybody to bring in their favorite song by their favorite group, the most influential song in your life, and we're going to put the words up on the overhead, and we're going to talk through it. Did that a whole summer. And you know what? Those songs sound a whole lot different in church than they do when they're plugged into their Discman. Some of the kids were very embarrassed that they were saying, this is my favorite, most influential song. But you know, it's time to bring those people to church. A few years ago, I was back in Texas speaking, and a woman came up to me. She had been a part of the youth group 20 years ago. She grabbed my hand. She's married now with 3 kids. Her first words out of her mouth were, you ruined my music listening. She said, I can't listen to a song now without thinking, what is this song telling me to believe? What's the worldview here? What are the values here? And then she smiled and said, it's the greatest gift I ever received. Discernment. The Apostle Paul tells us in 1 Thessalonians 5:21 to test everything. In the Greek, it means to test everything. Nothing should come into our hearts and minds that we don't test, evaluate. And with the pervasiveness of popular culture today, there is no discernment going on at all. That's why you can help yourself and the people to whom you minister to do that. Well, let me give you an example here. Our time is almost up. For too long, we've said, folks, you enslave yourself to us instead of us enslaving ourselves to them. Dress like us, smell like us, vote like us. You can be one of us. The example of Paul building that bridge. You know this passage. In fact, 2 years ago, your president came to Cedarville and preached on this passage. I can't improve on that. In fact, he actually improved on the Apostle Paul's interpretation of it, which is good. But let me just summarize very quickly here. Paul walks into Athens, the belly button of the universe, right there, onto Athens. Everything philosophically, politically, economically had come through Athens for many, many years. It was not quite in the ascendancy as the imperial city of Rome, but it was a prominent place for ideas. Paul walks in after leaving Thessalonica, Berea, left Silas and Timothy behind, walks in, as you see there, he was what? Greatly distressed. It's one word, the word from which we get paroxysm. His heart was broken for what reason? City was literally swamped with idols. The agora, the marketplace that the Greeks had built years before, was so full of idols that the Romans had to build another marketplace to carry out marketplace activity when they conquered the city. And the idols that were there, the places of worship, the small altars, were not these fat little Buddhas on a pedestal. Many of them were vile, violent, immoral, some just downright pornographic. And Paul walks into this. Was he offended? Probably. But his heart broke. His heart broke. And then he began to engage them. First in the synagogue where he always went, then in the marketplace to anyone who would listen. And then he was taken up to the Areopagus, which many people believe was the Mars Hill. The elite were there, and probably hundreds, maybe thousands of the people came to hear Paul. And notice what he says. He says, "Men of Athens, I see that in every way you are going to hell, every one of you." That's not what he said, was it? "I see that in every way you are very religious." Talk about putting a good spin. You guys are really religious. "Because I walked around and carefully looked at your objects of worship." He was trying to build that bridge. He was enslaving himself to them. Why do you worship this? It's a different culture in which he was preaching then, back in Acts 13. And then he began to preach to them. The heart and the mind. Let me quickly summarize here. Here's what he did. What was Paul's motivation? He was greatly distressed. The challenge for you, what breaks your heart? Every ministry that's born out of a broken heart will always be effective. Don't be a professional. Be a man or a woman whose heart is broken constantly for those who do not know the Lord. And what did he do? Just very quickly, he sought to understand the culture. He started where they were. He was positive about the truth he found. All error has bits of truth in it. He knew and quoted their sources. He quoted from Epimenides, 6th century poet philosopher. He quoted from Aratus, 3rd century Stoic philosopher. He knew what was popular with them. He knew what they liked to hear. He didn't start off by quoting scriptures. He quoted from them. When I go and lecture in Russia, I'll always bring Tolstoy and Dostoevsky and Turgenev with me. There's a lot of gospel in those writers. A lot of gospel. In fact, for many years, that was the only gospel that many Russians ever had, was reading Dostoevsky and Tolstoy. And he communicated the gospel. He did not water down the gospel at all. Beautiful, beautiful exposition of the biblical worldview. So my challenge for you, to check your heart and your mind. The attitude of your heart, let God break it. The altitude of your mind, make sure that you're looking worldviewishly. That you know the biblical worldview inside and out, but you also understand the other worldviews too. Because that is wherein we are called to be salt and light. Salt and light in a world so unsavory, so dark. But we have the truth, which allows us to be culturally relevant, to make a difference for Christ. Let's pray together. Father, thank you. Thank you so much for giving us light in this world that is so dark, to keep us from groping for some clue. Now we stand here, Lord, and ask you to use us, to look with broken hearts and tears at the world around us. Give us discernment that we might serve in a way that honors you, that glorifies you, and brings many into the family. I pray a special blessing on all those here as they look to their future. Guide them, Father, for your glory, not theirs.